My friends, I speak to you in the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of our lives. Please be seated. Put out into deep water and let down your nets for a catch. Deep water. I don't like the sound of that. Descending down to the ocean floor, Sylvia Earle was the first person to walk solo on the bottom of the world in 1979, under a quarter mile of water. And she describes the experience of first moving through that sunlit area into what's called the twilight zone, where the sunlight begins to fade and darkness begins to take over. And she said, by the time you've reached 200 meters, it's really, really dark. And you have to look up and strain your eyes to see that kind of soft glow where the noonday sun was penetrating the clear ocean water. And as this first woman, this first person, dressed in sort of a human-shaped submarine-type gear, walked for 2 hours on the base of the ocean, she said it held many surprises. There was the flash and sparkle and glow of bioluminescent creatures. She said there were corals that just glow in a single stretch. And when she moved her hands and touched them, these little rings of blue fire kind of pulsed away. She said it's kind of like a fiery light that glows at the bottom of the ocean. And she had this light that she could ask to be put on. She had a connection for air and she had a connection to speak to somebody. And as they put the light on, she said that the bottom of the ocean floor looked like a flower garden. She said there were red crabs that were hanging on these great sea fan-like structures. She said there were these eels that were kind of wrapped around the base of the coral. She said it was just beautiful, ethereal. Surprising life exists in the deep waters, my friends, if we will risk and put out into the deep. Now, Jesus' invitation to Peter was far more challenging than you and I might think. For in this mythic consciousness of a Jewish man lay an inherent fear of the depths. Luke carefully chooses words very different from Mark and Matthew as he describes Jesus inviting Peter to go to his very depths. To trust not only beyond himself, but beyond his view of the world. For in our first testament, we read the Jewish scriptures that give us this awareness that chaos still exists in our world. And it is a kind of a chaos that is a counter-creation force. And we first read of this in Genesis. We read of this tahom, this murmuring deep that was gurgling, and God and the Spirit moved over and brought some order. But the tahom still exists. This deep, this void, this watery absence is still there, present in our Old Testament scriptures. And some of the rabbis commenting on Genesis say that before God created light, the first act was to create silence. silence of the murmuring deep. And so Peter is asked to trust Jesus, to face something of his own fear, of the tahom that was gurgling inside of him. The voices of his past, maybe, that told him he wasn't good enough. The memories of things for him that put him in a place where he just really struggled to let go and surrender to something that was being asked of him. And invitations to face the deep are often disguised. Disguised as loss. Disguised as change. Disguised as illness or grief or human confrontation. Anything that when the waters within and around us are stirred and we experience turmoil, chaos, we are being invited to face our depths. And what an invitation it is. So scary, so filled with fear. And I don't know about you, but I notice this kind of pattern in my life. You know, that kind of person, that certain person that always gets under my skin, they seem to pop up wherever I go, whether it's South Africa, Vancouver, in the hospital system, in the church. Like, I can't run away from those kind of people. And it's like God insists on inviting us to face our depths. And at first we resist, just like Peter. Don't make me go there, Jesus. And yet, putting out into the deep waters is precisely the path of transformation. Trusting that as we face these things, our fears, our pain, our memories, our trauma, that there is new life, that there is a path of becoming a follower of Jesus. That this resurrected Christ will also bring new resurrected life in and around and through us. And so, friends, when the path of our lives takes us into chaotic waters, and it sure does, please know that you do not have to navigate these waters alone. Seek a friend, seek a spiritual director. Take time to find a trusted counselor. Try a few. It's never a one-size-fits-all. But the invitation is to put out into the deep. Job journeys through depths of his own in the beautiful poetry that we heard read today. The worst kind of combination of suffering. It's the kind of suffering that bewilders and even outrages us. Because it's one of the surprising things in this story and in our life that we come to see that there is no correlation between the amount of wrong we commit and the amount of pain we experience. And there's even a larger surprise. And it's actually that something quite the opposite. When we do right, we seem to get knocked down. When we do the best we are capable of doing, and we're just about to reach out to receive our reward, and we get hit from the blind side and we're sent reeling. Job was doing everything right, and suddenly everything went wrong. What a mystery. And in the course of facing and questioning and respecting suffering, Job finds himself in an even larger mystery, the mystery of God. Gustavo Gutierrez, who is known as a South American liberation theologian, comments on this chapter in Job, and he calls it the mysterious meeting of two freedoms. Mysterious meeting of two freedoms. He writes that God does not crush Job with power. Instead, God speaks to Job of divine creative freedom and at the same time respects human freedom. Brace yourself. Those are my words for gird up your loins. Brace yourselves. You are part of the mystery, but it is bigger than you know. You, I, we are late comers to the scene. Take your place in the universe. We are not at the center. And it's interesting as you read through Job, Job's friends try to find reasons for Job's suffering. Perhaps it's punishment for what you've done, they thought. But all of this places Job at the center, that all this is happening because of him. And God's speech beautifully, poetically says, no, my friends, the center is divine love, a free and gratuitous initiative. And we freely are invited to be loved and in turn to love. It is the mysterious meeting of two freedoms. When I'm walking through hard stuff, there are days when I just can't keep still, especially when there's something in my life that I just can't figure out, or there's a change that I can't make with my actions that I have to kind of let go. And it's on these days that I need to keep still, even though that I am afraid what the inner stillness will bring. And it's on these days that I heed the words of Celtic wisdom. There is a Celtic prayer and meditation that invites us to imagine our inner restlessness and suffering as the surface of a wavy, stormy ocean. And then to slip our minds beneath that surface, down, lower, into the stillness just below the surface of the water, into slow time. And as we let our mind descend into our heart and our bodies, we trust that the risen Christ still meets us and transforms us. That is our invitation today. Let me leave you with the words of Annie Dillard from a quote from Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. In the deeps are the violence and terror of which psychology has warned us. But if you ride these monsters deeper down, if you drop with them farther over the world's rim, you find what our sciences cannot locate or name, the substrate, the ocean or matrix of ether which buoys the rest, which gives goodness its power for good and evil its power for evil. A unified field, our complex and inexplicable caring for each other and for our life together here. This is given. It is not learned. May we walk today in courage. Amen.